My name is Eugene Gaillard. I'm an individual who values my freedom now. I'm so grateful to have had it back. I enjoy my family. I enjoy the additions, my recent additions to my family. I enjoy being in the presence of my family, and I just enjoy the opportunity to have my freedom reinstated and just being able to do positive things in my life.
My name is Lance Felder. I was wrongly convicted. I've been dead almost 17 years. But to put it in a nutshell, I'm just so happy to be with my family. It's just a wonderful thing. I now get to meet my grandkids. So it's wonderful. I'm just happy to be home.
Hi, this is Brooke, and you're listening to Actual Innocence, a podcast to help bring awareness of those who have been wrongfully convicted. In this episode, you'll hear the story of Lance Felder and Eugene Gaillard, two men who've been friends through their entire lives and also throughout their wrongful conviction. Eugene and Lance are hoping to take their new families to the Innocence Conference in March, and you can help them out by visiting razoo.com/story/support Gene and Lance. There is a great video of these two gentlemen on that site, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes for you. This episode is being brought to you once again by three sponsors, Hunt a Killer, Casper, and Spring. That means in March, I'll be able to travel to another Innocence Network agency and bring you more stories of exonerated people. So I want to talk to you quickly about Hunt a Killer. It's an interactive investigation delivered right to your doorstep each month. My box arrived near the end of January, and let me tell you, it's like a real-life Silence of the Lambs. You join by logging on to www.huntakiller.com and then apply for membership. They're growing pretty fast, and so they've limited their membership to 250 people each week. If you're accepted, you'll receive an email with a private link to complete your registration. From there, a package arrives on your doorstep each month filled with physical items and correspondence curated by their serial killer that have to be decoded, deciphered, and investigated to unravel the cases. And there's forums, secret Facebook groups, podcasts, and live videos to help you through your sleuthing. They've been featured in BuzzFeed, Fast Company, and the editors at Bustle are even writing weekly about their journey. If you follow me on social media or have visited my website, you'll probably notice that I've also created a blog about my Hunt a Killer adventure. And it's because Hunt a Killer is building a community of hunters around this super fun interactive investigation. I can't recommend this membership enough. And if investigating isn't your thing, you probably know someone who would love this as a gift. To help support our show, they've offered a 10% discount for our listeners, which is tracked by using the code CLUE. That's CLUE, to get 10% off. Just that one word, CLUE. So head on over to huntakiller.com and register now and tell them that I sent you by using my code, CLUE, at huntakiller.com. After leaving the Pennsylvania Innocence Project a few weeks ago, I was amazed at the hardworking people and the incredible stories of exoneration that I was able to hear about. One such story included two men, Eugene and Lance. During my short stay in Philadelphia, I wasn't able to talk with them in person, but I was really thankful when I was able to Skype with them last week. Lance and Eugene have been friends for pretty much their entire lives, including throughout their wrongful conviction. Early in the morning, on August 31st, in 1995, a man was shot outside the restaurant that he owned, which his adult daughter witnessed through a window overlooking the scene. Eugene and Lance, who were 16 years old at the time, were questioned and then released. The case went cold and then 2 years later was reinvestigated and Lance and Eugene were arrested. And this is their story.
We actually never knew we were suspects. I mean, when I was actually arrested for this crime and I was taken into custody, I didn't actually know what I was being arrested for. And I didn't learn until actually I was questioned regarding my knowledge of the crime. It wasn't until the actual interrogation that I actually learned why I was being held and what was the reason or the motive behind my arrest.
Yes, because I think it was the day after the crime happened, we had got interviewed and they had let us go. And 2 years later, they come and arrest me and my friend.
So the case was initially designated as a very early on as a cold case. And it was put into a cold case file. And it's a investigative homicide investigative unit of Philadelphia that investigates old unsolved homicide cases. And newer detectives were assigned to the case and they reinvestigated this case based on the actual same evidence that was initially present, which made the case a cold case to begin with. Only difference now is the victim's daughter, who failed to identify either of us days after the crime, she suddenly makes identifications more than 2.5 years later. And it was nothing else other than her eyewitness identification that tied us both to this crime and made us suspects and ultimately led to our false conviction, our wrongful conviction for the case.
You guys have been friends for a long time, right?
Yes, really since elementary school.
But who got picked up first?
We were all picked up together. It was a group of us. The day after, it was all picked up together and taken in. And I think the interrogations are all done individually.
Lance, what was your interrogation like?
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, how long was it? 2 days? What?
Well, it was hours.
Hours for like...
It felt like 2 days, probably.
Yeah. It felt like it. But you know how they come, they kept coming and try to say that Eugene said that I did it, and they probably, I don't know if they went back and told you, said that I said he did it, and it was a nightmare. I would never forget it.
I specifically remember being interrogated by two. I mean, what you see on TV is a reality of what it actually is, the good cop, bad cop. I mean, that's the actual strategy that they actually employ.
Mm-hmm.
And so what were the things that the good cop would say?
You know, they just tell you, you know, you can tell me anything, and if you did it, just tell me you did it, and it's going to be okay, and I'm here to help you. And they played a role in trying to elicit a confession from me.
And what did the bad cop, what would they say?
You know, they come in, and they played a role of being much tougher than the other cop and try to take the approach of getting you upset in hopes that, you know, you would blurt off something, you know, out of anger and frustration that were actually being criminating against you.
That sounded like they were trying to play you guys off of each other.
Yes. Yes, they do that. So they say to one of us that the other one is implicating us, and they be doing that back and forth with each other. And then, you know, and I guess they've had success with that. We're actually guilty people or maybe suspects that were actually, you know, guilty of the crime. That if they believed that, they were actually, you know, try to say I didn't do what the other person did or vice versa. But in our case, I knew early on that this was a lie. How will Lance say that I've done something that I know I didn't do that he know I didn't do?
Exactly.
See, it blows my mind that you guys were arrested because they didn't find any evidence.
In my case, specifically against me, it was nothing other than the victim's daughter identifying me from a folder right prior to my arrest, which led to my arrest. Shortly after my arrest, she identified me in a lineup, but then follow up with a statement thereafter saying, but I'm not sure. Then she came to the trial and emphatically stated she was 100% sure I was the man who she observed.
My situation was a guy which he made a statement at 95 saying that they showed a picture of me, and they said, well, he's from the neighborhood, that's Robbie's brother. That wasn't him that ran past me that night. But 2 years later, he comes and, you know, and say that it was me that ran past him that night.
Did he have, like, an incentive to say that? Like, did they give him some kind of deal or something? Or was he just misremembering?
Well, actually, he's come out recently saying that he was actually threatened by the detectives, the new detectives who were assigned to the case from the cold case squad. So his most recent statement is that he was threatened to saying that.
When did you get to talk to an attorney?
We was never offered an attorney during interrogation, never told of our rights to an attorney. I've actually didn't meet with any attorney until after my arrest, and that was when I was first introduced, and I had the first meeting with my court-appointed attorney at the county prison where I was being held at for trial.
Yeah, the same exact.
Were you guys tried together, or did you have separate trials?
No, we tried together.
I don't know how that works. Is it like one jury, or how did that work?
So it was a joint trial, and it was one jury. We were tried together. We both had our individual attorneys, but it was a joint trial where one jury considering the individual cases against the both of us.
How long was the trial?
The trial ended. We talked from the beginning of the trial to the actual verdict. It had to be approximately a month, but you know, it was majority of that, or a nice portion of that, was actually spent in deliberation, in jury deliberating, and kept coming back several times saying that they couldn't all agree upon a verdict.
I had to, remember, I had to go through the penalty phase because I was charged with first degree, and he was charged with second.
What's the difference? Can you explain the difference for me?
Oh, well, we were actually charged with the same, but I was found guilty of second, and he was found guilty of first, so which required him to actually have a penalty phase, because first degree carried a possibility of the death penalty, whereas we have no reason why the jury returned the verdict that they turned. We can speculate, and our belief was that Lance was initially described as the one who shot the deceased with the shotgun, and I was the one who shot him with the handgun, which was the most serious of the injuries. But we were found guilty of the opposite role. Sir. He was found guilty of the one who fired the handgun, the most serious injury, and I was found guilty of the one who shot the shotgun, which was considered to be the lesser. And we believe that that was the justification for the jury to find him guilty of first degree and to find me guilty of the lesser, which was second degree, which carried a mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Were you already locked up during the trial, or were you on house arrest? How did that work?
We were locked up. We was incarcerated the entire time, since the time that we was arrested all the way up until the time that we were found guilty. We was incarcerated.
What happened after you were found guilty?
Immediately following being found guilty, for me, I mean, if we go back to the exact moment in which I was found guilty, I was astonished. I couldn't believe that this could actually have happened, that this actually had happened to me. You know, I was an individual, didn't have much knowledge at that time of wrongful conviction, didn't even believe that it was a possibility that it could occur. You know, I had faith in the justice system, and I believe wholeheartedly that the justice system would find me not guilty, because I was not guilty. So when I actually got the jury returned a verdict of guilty, I mean, I couldn't believe what had occurred.
Me, I'm not going to lie. I cried on the sheriff's bus. From the courts all the way to back to the jail.
Where were you locked up at?
In Philadelphia. I was in a prison called Kern From Home Correctional Facility, and Lance was held in a county prison directly less than a mile away.
So it was even, you guys weren't even together?
No.
There's a direct appeal, right? After, like, you get an appeal automatically?
Well, my first appeal, I got denied.
And that was the same for me. My direct appeal was held by my same, filed on my behalf by the same attorney who had represented me during trial.
Exactly.
And very, very quickly after it was filed, it was denied.
And was it just like on paper? Like, I've come to realize that appeals a lot of times are just on paper. Like, you don't even get to go.
That's correct. I actually never left the prison that I was housed at and sentenced to serve my sentence. I never left that prison from the time that I got there. I didn't leave until I was actually transferred to the prison, which I would be held at for the hearing in my case after the Pennsylvania Innocence Project took on representation of my case and uncovered exculpatory evidence showing my actual innocence. So when I was transferred for that hearing, that was the actual first time that I had left that prison after having arrived there. I was in that prison for more than, I say, for approximately 14 years.
So I don't know if you guys know this, but a couple of weeks ago, I spent a couple of days at the Pennsylvania Innocence Project, and they're really nice folks. And I know how I got a hold of them. I just emailed. How did you guys get a hold of them?
I actually was working with, since the very first moments I was found guilty, I began to reach out to Innocence Projects throughout the country. At that time, we're talking back in 1998, 1999, the Pennsylvania Innocence Project had yet to be established. So when they were established, I was actually at that time in correspondence with a journalist school in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And the leader of that project actually informed me of the Pennsylvania Innocence Project establishment and suggested that I write to them and that they could possibly be of help to me. And that was the greatest news that I could have got, because immediately after I had wrote to them, they had written back to me and sent me a questionnaire, and I filled out a questionnaire, you know, in relation to my case, and, you know, gave them some details regarding some of the facts and the lack of evidence. And from there, you know, it began a great thing, from correspondence to, you know, exchanging documentation to, you know, visits to taking on my case and representation to hearing to today, when I'm pretty much a family, you know, have a family bond with each and every one of them. Originally, it was law students initially that I got the first correspondence with. After that, it was the staff attorney at the time, Charlotte Whitmore, who had eventually my case had reached her hands, and she reached out to me. And she would, we would get very close and get to know each other well throughout the investigation, her investigation of my case and her litigation of my case. And she became my attorney, and she represented me throughout the hearing all the way until my case was overturned.
And what about you, Lance? How did you get a hold of the Pennsylvania Innocence Project?
I was writing a couple of the Innocence Projects, but when Eugene told me he had heard something back from this firm, I said, okay. So he told me to fall back and relax and let him, you know, handle everything. So I just fell back and relaxed. And, you know, they had wrote me and told me that we going over your case. Eugene, Bill, y'all got with us. And they also told me to relax. So I just put it in their hands.
Did it feel good knowing that someone was working on your case?
Oh, yes. Yes.
How long had you been incarcerated before, like, they contacted you back?
So from the time that we was actually wrongfully convicted until the time that we began our communication with the Pennsylvania Innocence Project, it was approximately maybe 9 years, 10 years.
I think that's amazing that you didn't lose hope and that you were still, because you knew you were innocent and you just kept fighting for your innocence. I think that's really amazing.
Yes.
Tell me about your exoneration.
Yeah, so initially the judge who was overseeing our case and overseeing the case and listening to the testimony and reviewing the evidence, she done the most that she had the authority to do, and the most she could do. She couldn't declare us innocent legally, but what she could do was she felt that there was enough evidence to vacate our sentences. It's not enough evidence to uphold this conviction, so she vacated our sentence and ordered that a new trial be held in our case based upon the entire picture, including all the newly discovered evidence that had been, you know, uncovered and presented at the hearing that lasted throughout the summer of 2013. So a new trial was ordered in our case. The district attorney didn't appeal that decision. 30 days after that decision was made, we was fortunate enough to be allowed to come home on house arrest pending the decision of the district attorney's office to retry the case or not. So we came home, and we both was home on house arrest. Oh, man, that was freedom. That was great. That was the most freedom we had known for more than a decade.
What happened when you went home on house arrest? Like, who did you go home to?
When I came home, my mom had since, as did most of my family, relocated. My mom was living with her husband, her newly husband, who she had recently married at the time. I was fortunate to come home and go to the home of my mother. I was married. Not only did I come home to that house, but my wife stayed there as well. But it was an amazing feeling from the time that I actually pulled up in front of the house and stepped out of the sheriff's van, that all of my family was standing there applauding and clapping, including members of the Pennsylvania Innocence Project. They was all standing there and welcomed me home, and it was just a great feeling, and it was highly an emotional feeling for me as well.
What was your experience like, Lance?
It was wonderful. My mom and father passed away when I was young, so all I had was my sister and my brother. So coming home, I came to my sister's house, and she ain't had no kids, none of that. When I got locked up, she got, now I get to meet my my nieces and my nephew. So it was wonderful. So that's why I went straight to my sister's house.
What was something that was a big deal to you about being home?
To me, it was having access to technology. That was great. Being able to move around, even though we were confined in a home, this home was 10 times larger than the cell that I was confined to. So I can get up and move around the home and eat what I wanted to eat. I had options, you know, when it came to food and what I wanted to eat and what I had a taste for. I could see who I wanted to see. You know, family members were stopping by, visiting me, breaking me gifts. You know, these are things I wasn't privileged to as a result of my wrongful conviction.
Mine was that bed. I jumped right in that bed.
Let's take a minute to talk about Casper mattresses. I'm sure you've heard Casper mentioned on some of the other podcasts that you listen to. I know I have. And I appreciate their support of podcasts so much. After hearing so many podcasts endorse this product, I wanted to find out for myself what Casper was all about. I'm not sure if you know this or not, but I have fibromyalgia, which makes some basic things difficult, like, you know, sleeping. I need to tell you that Casper has changed my life and made sleeping so much easier. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress that's sold directly to us from them, eliminating the middleman and inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house. It has a sleek design and is delivered in a small, how did they do that, size box. Seriously, I need them to come help me move. In addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. Beyond the mattress itself, one of the things that I love about Casper is that it's totally risk-free. They offer free delivery, and you get a 100-night home trial. That means if you don't love it, they'll pick it up for free and refund you everything. They understand that some of us need to really sleep on a mattress before we make a final decision, especially because we're going to be spending a third of our lives with it. The Casper mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It combines supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep surface, just the right sink, and just the right bounce, which is totally true. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. It has free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. This mattress is designed, developed, and assembled in the USA, and you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/actual and using the promo code actual. Again, that's casper.com/actual and use the promo code actual. And of course, terms and conditions apply. I want to take a second to tell you about Spring. I buy pretty much everything online, from clothes to equipment to shoes and gifts for others. It's just really convenient. Spring makes that even easier because they have pretty much everything I need in one place with free shipping and free returns. I just got a new printer from Spring to replace my old printer that's duct taped together, and the process was so fast and so easy. It turns out there are over 1,500 brands on Spring for fashion, beauty, and basically all of your lifestyle needs. I love that I don't have to visit multiple sites when I shop with Spring. Some of the brands that I've noticed are Urban Outfitters, Marc Jacobs, and Smashbox. It's super convenient too. I can either use my Spring app on my phone or just go to shopspring.com. And I can track brands and items and receive alerts when they go on sale. I highly recommend that you download the Spring app in the App Store or go to shopspring.com right now to start saving on all the latest fashions and lifestyle trends. Get free shipping and free returns on your Spring purchases with no spending minimums. And as an added bonus, use my code ACTUAL at checkout to take 20% off your first purchase. See the website for more details. That's shopspring.com or shop through the Spring app and use the code ACTUAL. You can find exclusive sales and discounts on all the latest trends and styles you'll love.
So the new trial actually didn't occur. After being home for approximately 6 months and having, you know, multiple, going back to court multiple times, you know, pending the district attorney's announcing their decision. Finally, after being home for possibly 6 or 7 months, the district attorney withdrew the charges in our case.
They tried to block you several times, right?
Yes. So, yeah, they fought us real hard throughout the hearing. That, and surprisingly, the fight wasn't that we were not innocent. The fight initially was that the judge didn't have jurisdiction to even rule, to even hear our case. It was a jurisdictional argument, which I didn't understand. I mean, it's an unfortunate argument that, you know, the district attorney had in the state of Pennsylvania. But to me, you know, it was, you know, what even though we were innocent and we were diligent in uncovering this evidence and notifying the courts about it, but shortly after we became aware of this evidence, why should it matter that we weren't diligent? I mean, this was their argument, but what should it matter? We're innocent. We shouldn't be in this situation to begin with.
Well, and you mentioned the evidence. Wasn't the evidence that someone else confessed?
Yes. But initially, it wasn't even a challenge to the confession. The initial argument was that we were time barred and that this evidence shouldn't even be considered because it was too late.
So, yeah, they're innocent, but so what was basically their argument?
Yes.
Yeah. Eugene, were you the one who found the person who confessed?
No, actually, the person reached out to a relative of Lance. Lance shared the good news with me, and was fortunate enough to have a friend who was able to hire a private investigator on my behalf and have him go visit him at his prison he was currently held at that time.
Tell me about the day that you found out you were free, like no more house arrest, nothing.
We went, Matt, me and Eugene, we went together to take our house arrest anchors off. And we went to go eat. We went out to go eat together.
The actual house arrest, we was actually in court. I remember the Pennsylvania Innocence Project attorneys and Marissa telling us that they was going to ask the judge to take us off house arrest. Mm-hmm. Initially, I was kind of, I was so grateful to be home that I didn't think that the judge was going to do it. You know, so when we went to court and they attempted to make an argument on behalf of why we should be taken off house arrest, the judge told Marissa that she didn't need to make an argument. So initially, I didn't know. I knew this was either a very good thing or a very bad thing. I said, it's either very good because she already had her intentions of taking us off, or it was very bad, as in there's nothing you can tell me that's going to make me take them off her house. But fortunately for us, it was the first of the two. She already had made her mind up that she was going to take them off house.
So what did you do?
So the first thing we had to do was go to the place and to get our ankle monitors removed.
I'll be him there. Remember, I'm calling you. Where you at?
How did that feel?
It felt great.
Oh, it felt good.
Just to be able to, now you're not confined to your home and seek permission to leave. Now, we had the freedom to come and go to our homes as we like. And so that was a little bit more freedom that we were given. We still wasn't 100% free because we still at that time had the charges pending, but it was still another step closer to regaining our freedom.
So tell me about when the charges were completely dropped, when it was over.
I mean, that was a great time. You know, that last block that we had on our backs, these pending charges, to actually go to court and have the district attorney announce that they agreed to withdraw the charges. That was the last step we had to take before we actually felt that we was completely free and exonerated, truly exonerated.
Yeah. I mean, we took that big picture. Remember, we took that big picture out in front
of the court? Yes, we was fortunate enough to capture that moment and take a picture outside the courthouse and have our attorneys and some of the law students and members of the Pennsylvania Innocence Project, as well as our own individual family members.
Do you still have that picture?
Yes, I believe it may be on the Pennsylvania Innocence Project page.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll use it, because when I put this out, I get to put a picture with it. You guys, I have to tell you, you have the best attitude. And it's amazing because, you know, the other day my check engine light came on. And I was like, oh, man, I can't drive my car. And then I listened to you guys, and you're like, man, yeah, I was on house arrest. Like, that's amazing. Do you think that those positive attitudes are what kept you going?
Yes, that's what I think. Because we could write each other if you got, we had to go through our counselor at the jails and to let them know that we co-defendants and we can write each other. So we used to just keep ourselves. I used to keep his head up, and he used to write me and keep my head up.
Right. And that experience that we endured make you appreciate your freedom that much more, because, you know, it's unfortunate that we was convicted for something we didn't do, but it's a great honor and a great blessing that we're home, because we know that there's a lot of people that's wrongfully convicted that's still incarcerated. You know, some people that may never actually had their freedom reinstated. So, you know, why something bad like that happened is a great thing when it's corrected. And, you know, we live our life based off of our appreciation for having our freedom reinstated.
So what advice would you give to someone who's wrongfully convicted or who's finding themselves wrongly accused?
Fight. Never give up.
I swear to God, that was the word that was on my tongue. Keep fighting.
No matter how many times you're told no or the door slammed on you, you keep fighting.
Keep fighting.
What do you think people like me, like just regular people, can do to help people who've been wrongly convicted?
I mean, we got to be educated on the fact that it's a reality. Even myself, I was once unaware that it was a reality. Even when it had happened to me, as I previously mentioned, I didn't think that it was a possibility that I could be found guilty. So people just got to be educated on the fact that it's a reality. It have happened in the past. And, you know, it's still happening. It's still occurring. It might not be at the rate that it was happening in the past, but it's still occurring, and there's still people who's wrongfully convicted for crimes that they didn't commit.
So it's about 6:15, and I know we met in the evening because you guys had to work, right?
Yes.
So can you guys tell me what are you doing now?
We actually both work at the same company. We work for a manufacturing company that makes everything from fill covers to wall paddings to, you know, government tarps to truck tarps.
Do you like it?
Yes, I love it.
Yes.
Someone mentioned, Eugene, at the beginning, some new members to your family. So what's going on with your family now?
So me and my wife, I was blessed when I came home to have a wife that was with me and married me even during my time of incarceration, who believed that one day we would have the life that we have now, not knowing that it would actually happen, but believing and having faith that it would happen. So, and it has happened. So I was blessed to have her and to have not my biological son, but someone who I love and raised as my biological son. So I was blessed in that aspect. But, you know, shortly after I came home, within a few months, we got the great news that my wife was pregnant and we had a daughter. Her name is Amira, and she's, you know, the apple of my eyes. And then within a year and a half after that, my wife is pregnant again, and we had a son. We have a son now. He's 7 months old. He's just amazing.
He's 7 months old now?
Yes.
Man, how are you awake? Like, to be talking to me.
He's a great baby. He sleeps during the night. Then my wife is even she's great.
And what about you, Lance? What are you doing now?
Oh, well, I'm also married. Stepkids.
Is it fun, like, to have kids around? Because I imagine in prison, you don't have a lot of kids hanging out.
I always go see my nieces and nephews all the time. My grandkids. I ain't having no kids. I got grandkids. Right? But, yeah, I just love being around my nieces and nephews. It's wonderful. It's just wonderful.
It's amazing for me to, you know, I didn't have any kids prior to my arrest. So to actually come home and now have children and feel like, you know, my lineage can, you know, possibly continue to go on. And just to be able to raise kids and to see my own self and to see my qualities and my children and to be able to see them learn and make mistakes and I'll be able to correct them and possibly raise them to be better than me. It's just a great experience.
Is there anything I should have asked you about that I didn't?
I mean, we have a fundraiser that's going on right now. So one of the best things we got to experience since we've been home is there's a thing called the Innocence Network. And what they actually do is they bring all the exonerees from around the country that have been exonerated, and it's an annual thing in which they bring them all to one location. Every year is a different place. It's a different city. And they bring us all together in one place, and we're allowed to intermingle, meet one another. There's a lot of things that's available for us in terms of workshops. They help people get health insurance for the people that need that. They teach you how to tell your story for the people who's having psychological problems as a result of, you know, the thing they had to endure, the wrongful conviction, they helped them with that. So, I mean, just about any type of help that an exoneree can need is there for them. So we were fortunate enough after we came home, to be the attendant of the exoneree conference in Orlando, Florida. And they're having another one this year in March, where we're hoping to be able to attend. The cost is not covered no more. They only, when we exonerate, they cover your first trip. So it's not covered. This is not our first. This will be our second. So we're hoping to be able to attend with the help of the people who are, you know, presently at the moment contributing to a fundraiser that's been established in our names. And we're hoping to be able to reach that goal of that dollar, that monetary amount, which we will be able to go with our families and attend and meet all the exonerees and new exonerees that have come home after us.
And me, I'm going to be there.
Yes, oh, yeah. So we don't got to do the Skype thing. We can meet you in person.
Right. So Marissa sent me the link to the website for that. So I'll put that on my social media. And so if people want to click on it, all they have to do is like click and donate. It's super simple. I tried it already. My listeners are so great. I'm sure that they will help support you too. In just a minute, you're going to hear Megan read the credits. Remember, you can support Eugene and Lance by visiting razu.com/story/support-Eugene-and-Lance. I also wanted to mention that there will likely be some upcoming meetups in March, potentially around Baltimore, Fort Worth, and San Diego. So please keep an eye on our social media and website for more details. So, until next time, I'm Brooke. Thanks so much for listening.
A quick note before we get to the credits. In the spirit of Valentine's Week, we wanted to send out a big congratulations to our very own Casey Sanders, who got married on Tuesday. Congratulations, Casey and Seth. Another related personal shout out, my mom got engaged on Monday. So congratulations to Renee and Brian. What a Valentine's week. Okay, on to the credits. A special thanks to our sponsors, Spring, Casper, and Hunt a Killer, for sponsoring today's episode. Remember, if you can't financially support our sponsors, feel free to give them a shout out on social media to let them know that you appreciate the support. Visit our website, www.actualinpod.com, to see our calendar, ways to support the show, and pictures. The Actual Innocence podcast is hosted by Brooke Giddings, and she receives help from the most amazing volunteer team ever, Casey Sanders, Megan Delaney, and Sarah Nelson. We are also so appreciative of our transcription team, Tori Lynch and Jane Ashton. Our executive producer is Dennis Robinson, and our theme song is by Andy Cohen. Until next time, listen, learn, and advocate for justice. Thanks for listening.